evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington, and here are some of the stories we're covering for you today, Monday, September 23rd, 2019. Church leaders note it's been a year since the peace deal was signed, but they say not much has changed.
There are people who say peace has come, but killings are still ongoing, as I heard yesterday.
And a church property dispute lands at least two South Sudanese in the hospital.
The woman was badly injured and the other man is here. They usually send police, soldiers to this place to come and fight with people.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Roman Catholic leaders in Tourette and Yei say they're concerned that a year after the revitalized peace deal was signed by both sides of the warring parties, South Sudanese are still suffering and insecurity persists. The religious leaders are calling on South Sudan's politicians to protect the citizens rather than their own personal interests. Winnie Serino reports for VOA from Juba.
The church leaders made the remarks Saturday during the centenary celebrations of the Catholic Diocese of Tourette and Yei in Rajaf near Juba. Speaking in Arabic, Paulino Lokodiloro, Archbishop of the Catholic Archdiocese of Juba, said even though the warring parties say they are committed to restoring peace, not much has changed from a year ago.
There are people who say peace has come, but killings are still ongoing, as I heard yesterday. There is death. Is that peace? Yes, we may believe that peace has come, but we are still struggling. There are people who are dying of hunger. There are people being killed and homes being burned, and people are being robbed. Is that peace?
Archbishop Lokodu says some leaders discriminate on the basis of tribe or religion, something he says destroys families and communities across the country. Lokodu is urging South Sudan's leaders to practice what he calls rightful politics and allow South Sudanese to live peacefully among one another.
You should lead the people on the way of God. That is what we expect of you as Christian leaders. Our Catholics must be true citizens of the country and not the enemies of the country. The country is ours, but we must lead it on the way to God, because ultimately all the people of God must go to God.
Santa Luku, auxiliary bishop of the Catholic Archdiocese of Juba, says several people who were displaced years ago from their hometowns due to the conflict are still struggling to survive.
We still live in the forest, under rains, because of the war we are in, and in the refugee camps, under the protection of the UN. As we pray today, let us ask God to grant us the gift of true peace so that our people can enjoy the fruits of the gospel values.
Popo Pasido, who attended the centenary celebration at All Saints Parish in Rajaf, says he believes peace can be restored when the leaders resolve the problem of tribalism in South Sudan. He urged leaders to listen to the views of the people when making decisions on government reforms.
As the government thinks of forming the government by the next coming month, actually we need a true peace that reflects the opinion of the grassroots people. We don't want the peace that is said at the political level. We want a peace that can reach the grassroots. And we don't need any impediment anymore. We don't need these questions of no fundings, not anything. We are really tired.
For months, various committee leaders and government officials have blamed a lack of funding for failing to implement the peace deal. Lual Deng, another participant at the celebration, says there is not much that ordinary citizens can do if the warring parties fail to work together to bring peace to the country. He urged leaders to admit they have failed the citizens of their country and reconcile quickly.
Who created the war in South Sudan, they know, and they can realize and bring peace back to South Sudan. Let them be honest. Let them be realistic. Let them think that they were born in South Sudan and they are working for the goodness of South Sudan.
More than 1,000 Catholic faithful from Tourette, Yei, and Juba attended the celebration under the theme, Renewing Our Faith, Responding to Its Challenges at All Saints Parish, Rajaf. The government and opposition parties are expected to form a unity government in November. At a recent face-to-face meeting in Juba, both President Salva Kiir and rebel leader Riek Machar vowed to make that happen by the November deadline, even though several contentious issues like the number of seats have yet to be resolved. For VOA News, I am Winnie Serino in Juba.
Two people were hurt during clashes between police and unarmed civilians over a church in Juba last week. Police say they were executing a court order to demolish St. Josephine Bakita Chapel, which they say stands on private land. Civilians argue the plot on which the chapel sits belongs to the Roman Catholic Church. Viola Elias has more for VOA from Juba.
Hundreds of civilians carrying stones, sticks, panga knives and other crude weapons charge armored cars carrying dozens of police officers outside the church on Wednesday. The officers retreated to a nearby police station. During the scuffle, one civilian was shot at her cheese while the other lost a number of teeth. The civilians then barricaded themselves inside the chapel compounds. St. Josephine parishioner Rebecca Pony wipes as she described what happened. Speaking in Arabic, Pony says armed police officer began beating church members, ordered them to vacate the church compound, claiming the church property had been sold out to another party.
The woman was badly injured and the other man is here. They usually send police, soldiers to this place to come and fight with people here. Is this really good? Today when they arrived here, all of us came out because these days everyone in the area is more alert knowing that the policemen will come here at any time. To tell you the truth, you can see soldiers shooting at the civilians. Is this what the government of South Sudan wants to see happening? This is a place for prayers.
Parishioner Dennis Swakaladu says for the past few days some church members have been sleeping at the chapel after realizing a high-ranking politician was planning to grab the land and demolish the church. Speaking in Arabic, Ladu says police on many occasions try to arrest members of the church who resist attempts by politicians to land grab the church property.
The issue
of this church has started way back in 2011, and all of us were involved. For someone like me, I was once arrested and put in prison because of this church issue. If you are a responsible person here at the church, they would just come and arrest you and put you in jail.
Ladu says they have been battling the politicians in court every year. Reverend Father Samuel Abbe Joseph, the Secretary General of the Catholic Archdiocese of Juba, says the Archdiocese of Juba legally acquired the land in the early 90s and has the document to prove it. Reverend Abbe says he was surprised to hear that someone would send an armed police force to a church compound. The Juba State Physical Infrastructure Ministry resolved a land dispute 2 weeks ago in favor of the church, according to Abe, and compensated the other claimant of the land. Father Abe blames the country judiciary system for not confiscating the invalid document that lawmaker Honorable Paul Joseph Dili had produced with claimed proof he owned the church land. South Sudan in Focus could not independently verify the claim.
We notified the judiciary, and even the Minister of Infrastructure has written a notice. The judiciary, we raised those names on the registry, but I think there is a problem with the registrar. As a church, we have raised this to the authorities of the government, especially the government of Dubai State. And I have been running up and down since yesterday, notify the authorities and the police, the person of the Minister of Interior, and the City Council, the Deputy Mayor.
Speaking in Arabic, Jubek State Governor Agustino Jadala, who intervened during the clashes, said the land belongs to the church.
No one should come here as an individual to claim that this land is his. This land is for the church because the church belongs to all of us and we are the church ourselves. So I came here because I was told that there was fighting over this land.
Governor Jadala urged everyone to go home and promise no one would confiscate the land. Major General Daniel Justin, spokesperson of the National Police Service, claims police were executing a court order to demolish the church. South Sudan in Focus could not independently verify the court order.
The problem was the public. The public started to throw stones on the police. That is how the situation was about to run out of hands. You see, that was it. First of all, the security is our concern. If there is that act or that orders to demolish the place can create insecurity, of course we will not do it.
Daniel says land disputes are common in South Sudan and insists that police only intervene when there is a need to keep the law and order. For VOA News, I am Viola Elias in Juba.
The United Nations High Commission for Refugees, or UNHCR, in Uganda says unless it finds a way to cover a 65% budget shortfall this year, or about $600 million, it won't be able to provide education or health services to more than a million refugees in Uganda, most of whom are South Sudanese. Megumi Davis-Rakawinj has more for VOA from Kampala.
More than 840,000 South Sudanese refugees are sheltering in camps in Uganda, according to statistics released at the end of last month by UNHCR and Uganda. 60-year-old South Sudanese refugee Monica Modi Azaria lives in Rhino Camp in Arua district of northern Uganda. Azaria says the food aid she receives from UN agencies is not enough to feed her family of 16. Even though the food is insufficient, Azaria says she sells some of it to raise money to meet her family's other needs.
When we are given these beans, when you wanted to cook it, you need firewood or charcoal. And we don't have it around unless you take part of the ratio to the market and sell it out. So that when the people in the village around, when they brought this firewood and the charcoal, then we buy with that money.
In 2016, Azaria fled Yei Rivers County, Mugopayam, with her 4 children, 9 grandchildren, and 3 unaccompanied minors when fighting broke out. She and her family have remained at the camp ever since. At Rhino Camp, each refugee receives 11 kilograms of maize, 2 kilograms of beans, and a liter of cooking oil each month. Before, refugees were also provided with polished flour, salt, and soap, but not anymore. 35-year-old South Sudanese refugee Alfred Lomoro fled Jimunuboma in Yei Town along with his wife, 5 children and 3 relatives in September 2016. He agrees that life is difficult at Rhino Camp. Lomoro says he has been trying to find a job to support his family, but there are not enough to go around for refugees like himself.
As a result of all this, it's getting back to our families, you can see. 2 of my girls have dropped out of school just due to all these challenges that I cannot support them. I cannot support their basic needs.
Joel Botloy, the UNHCR representative in Uganda, says a drop in funding means many refugees can no longer send their children to school.
We still have to date over 30% of primary age school children not going to primary school. We have over 80%, 85% of secondary age kids not going to secondary school. So this translates in suffering. So this lack of funding is not a theoretical thing.
But Troy is calling on international donors to honor their pledges to support refugees so UNHCR can run activities like schools and healthcare clinics. Uganda hosts about 1.3 million refugees. An overwhelming majority of them fled the 5.5-year civil war in South Sudan. For VOA News, I am Mugume Davis Rwakarinji in Kampala, Uganda.
You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Sudan's new leader orders an independent probe into the country's deadly protests. We'll have more on that when we come back.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what is preventing you from reaching your goals?
What is preventing me? Of course, my earning. You know, money does everything, most of the things. Not everything, but most of the things. My earning has not yet sustained me to earn my achievements. But I know with time, as I do other side incomes, I'll achieve.
I find my time so scarce, so limited, to accomplish my plans over the day. And secondly, money. Everything rotates around money.
Jobs are scarce. Like, I'm working, but this is not the best thing I'm supposed to do. Because I have my papers, but I'm not using them. I've moved around trying to look for jobs up and down, looking through newspapers. I apply for something, but still, I'm not yet called on.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1-202-630-8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1-202-630-8011.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Some immigrants from Sudan and South Sudan told this program last week that they found living and adjusting to Canadian life extremely challenging. Gabriel Jahl, who has resettled in Canada through a refugee program some 10 years ago, says it was not that hard for him to adjust to Canadian life since he learned English and integrated into the host community both fairly quickly.
I learn English back home, just not like very well. And then I struggle, and then I get my high school here, and then I go to college, and then I finish my college, and then I still working here, yeah, for living. Yeah.
Most of the time, are you in touch with people in South Sudan?
Yeah, I'm in touch with my brother. Yeah.
And how do you feel about what is going on in the country? There's been fighting there from 2012 until now. How do you feel about that?
I feel sorry, really. When I heard the news in South Sudan, what's going on, I feel very, very, very sorry.
If you are given an opportunity to fix what's going on in South Sudan, what will you do?
First thing I do, I let people live in peace.
But how would you make people live in peace? You know, people are fighting. A lot of people have died.
Really, that fighting, nobody expected to be the fight to be there in South Sudan. They can fix it if we have really leader or we have good heart to fix it. We have
President Kiir and rebel leader Riek Machar. These are leaders, right? Taban Dengai, Lama Kol, and the list is endless. These are leaders. Why do you think they are not able to fix it?
Some leaders, they don't have a heart to fix this because they work for their benefit or their relative. You know, you don't want to be like, if I fix this one, all my family, all my relative, we can get a job. Because there, when I see it, when you see it, there are some, not like qualified people they put in the ministry or they put in to be a governor, some state, you know. This one really, really is very, 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 very painful.
So you're telling me it's because they are putting people who are not qualified, that's why we're having problems? Is that what you're telling me?
Yeah.
I don't want to put words into your mouth.
Yeah.
Do you have any proof that the people who are ruling South Sudan are not qualified?
Not all. Some of them not qualified.
Jahl, you're here in Canada, and do you have any intention of going back home?
Right now, no.
Why? You have to go and fix this problem. Me and you, we have to go and fix the problem.
Yeah, right now it's not. I can never go now, right now, because the situation there is very, very hard. And then my kid is still younger in high school. You know, high school here, when the kids go to high school, they need parents to be close to them.
People that I meet here say it was not easy for them to integrate. You know, you like walwal. Chuck and all these things, they're not here. How did you manage?
I miss that one. Now I'm not reading well because I'm growing up in Khartoum, and then just sometime my mom in Khartoum doing well. Here when I came here, my wife doing different food, especially the Equatorial food.
What is Equatorial food? I don't know. You tell me.
They make korofo, they make nyete. You know, that food, we make it here. You know, it's very joyful too.
So you don't miss home because your wife is feeding you on traditional food.
That's Gabriel Jahl, a South Sudanese Canadian who resides in Kitchener, Canada, speaking with my colleague John Tansa. Sudan's new Prime Minister, Abdalla Hamdok, has ordered an independent investigation into June's deadly crackdown on protesters, which left scores of unarmed citizens dead. Protest leaders had demanded the creation of an international inquiry as part of a subsequent power-sharing deal with the military, but the generals insisted on a Sudanese-led probe. According to the Professional Doctors Association and various protesters, at least 128 people were killed and hundreds more were wounded when security forces used force to disperse the protesters' main sit-in outside the military headquarters in the capital, Khartoum, on June 3rd. Military authorities said the death toll was 87, including 17 inside the sit-in area. The violence sparked a nationwide crackdown that ended talks between the protesters and the ruling generals, who in April ousted longtime ruler President Omar al-Bashir. Protests that began over skyrocketing prices for bread and fuel quickly morphed into demands for Bashir to step aside. Hamdok said on Saturday that the investigation will be led by a 7-member committee, which includes a top judge, an independent figure, and 2 lawyers. He said the Justice, Defense, and Interior Ministries will also be represented on the panel. The investigation is supposed to wrap up within 6 months. It could seek support from the African Union, according to Hamdok. A probe led by Sudanese prosecutors in July said that the ruling generals did not order the deadly breakup, but that military forces or RSF forces were responsible for the carnage. Prosecutors said security forces exceeded their orders. Prosecutor Fathil Rahman said security forces were instructed to clear a lawless area near the protest camp, but not the entire sit-in area itself. In neighboring Kenya, part of a school building collapsed in central Nairobi today, killing at least 7 children. Dozens more were injured. For VOA, Mohammed Yusuf has the story from the Kenyan capital.
What was supposed to be an ordinary day at Precious Talent Top School was anything but as a wing of the 2-story building collapsed. Reports say the first floor of the building collapsed on children on the ground level. Images of rescue workers sifting through concrete slabs and metal sheeting to look for victims were broadcast on television. Education Minister George Magoha updated the nation on the incident.
We have regrettably lost 7 young lives to this morning's incident that occurred at around 8 a.m. as the learners in classes 5 to 8 were starting their morning lessons. 64 learners are admitted at Kenyatta National Hospital. Of these, 62 have soft tissue injuries, while 2 require more attention.
In Kenya's school system, classes 5 to 8 cover children between the ages of 10 and 14. Stephen Odhiambo says 2 of his children were at the school. He was among the first responders. I was here in the morning around 7. I tried to rescue the children, including my daughter, he says. We went home with my daughter. After 20 minutes, she started crying, her head hurts. I took her to a dispensary near my home. Odhiambo says his daughter was later transferred to a larger hospital for further treatment. One parent at the main hospital said staff have not given them an update on the injured children. The parent said by 8 I was in the hospital, they gave the child a number and he was in third stretcher. Since then, I don't know what is going on, whether he's receiving treatment. They told us they forwarded off all the names of the students in the hospital to the information center. I couldn't find the name of my child. They chased us away, saying the children would be treated. I'm here, I don't know what's happening. It's not clear why the accident happened, although some residents are blaming shoddy construction. It is being reported that cement was only used in the foundation of the building. Kenya has witnessed building collapses in the past. In 2016, a similar incident claimed the lives of more than 40 people. Contractors have been accused of not following regulations when constructing such buildings. Meanwhile, the government has closed the school for 4 days, with officials saying they want to make sure the rest of the structure is safe before students are readmitted. Mohammed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
We turn to South Africa now, where the government has declared gender-based violence a national crisis. According to a new government report, a woman is murdered every 3 hours in South Africa. Many are assaulted and raped first. From Johannesburg, Thuso Kumalo looks at how deep the crisis is and how the government is proposing to address the problem.
These are angry women of South Africa recently protesting against gender-based violence that seems to be spinning out of control. Nomakhosazana Qaba, in her late 20s, says this violence now resembles a country at war against its women.
Enough is enough. A lot has been said, but still there's no changes. It's been years. We are being brutally victimized each and every day, every second. Am I next? It's fearing to live.
The latest wave of outrage was sparked by the recent murder of Uyinene Mkhwetjana. The 19-year-old University of Cape Town student was raped and killed inside a post office by an employee while she was trying to collect a parcel. The latest crime statistics released by the Department of Police reveal the depth of the crisis. Nearly 3,000 women were murdered between April 2008 and March of this year. This translates to 7 per day. The murder rate for South African men is also high, 50 per day. However, many of the female victims are brutally assaulted and raped before being murdered. In many cases, their bodies are disposed of in the bush, in shallow graves, or burned beyond recognition. Refilwe Mukhakhabe has this message to men in South Africa.
Instead of you taking a life or instead of you raping a woman, seek help. Do not allow it to grow to a point where you no longer see me as a human being and you no longer value my life and you rape me and you kill me.
In unison, the women called on government and the private sector to provide funds to fight the scourge. It's a call the government could not ignore. President Cyril Ramaphosa recently convened an urgent joint session of parliament to find a solution to gender-based violence. The action plan he presented includes setting up a $68 million fund, beefing up the criminal justice system, improving the legal and policy framework around sexual offences and other forms of gender-based violence, and empowering women economically.
Those who are found guilty of such crimes should not be eligible for parole. And if sentenced to a life sentence, this must just mean what it is, life in prison.
Mbuyiselo Botha, a gender violence expert and member of the Commission for Gender Equality, agrees.
There are lots of women out there who still feel that the police have no clue about what domestic violence is, sexual violence is, Sexual Offences Act is. So these are the places that you can do immediate something about it.
These women say whatever the government intends to do, they hope it will happen fast, before they also become part of the rape and murder statistics. Thuso Kumalo for VOA News, Johannesburg.
That is our show for this Monday. We leave you with the song Ya Salam by Emmanuel Jal and artist Abdel Salim.
Ya Salam, As-salam. السلام أزهر وفل واقع صبح أجمل غرار.
We've been listening to South Sudanese superstar Emmanuel Jal and Abdel Salim with the song Ya Salam. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington. We're glad you could be here. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. للناس مراد وأحسن خيال فارد جناح طوق للنجاة للناس مراد وأحسن خيال